In case you hadn't heard the news, we're all caught up, so we're going to review tonight's episode, Civis Pacem, Parabellum. If you want peace, prepare for war. Star Trek Weekly starts now!
You're tuning in to the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin!
And if you didn't like the way I pronounced that in Latin, make sure you put it in the comments. But you have to write your criticism in Latin. Welcome to Star Trek Weekly. I am Christian Blad at ChristianDMZ. And on the other side of the desk, Frank Moran at HappyGoJackie. Not with us. A happy-go-carry herself is on assignment. I believe she's got some shore leave, but she'll hopefully be back for the fall finale next week. I thought that this would be a fun song because of the English translation of the title of the episode. And they are preparing for war in the course of the episode, which we will get to as we dissect it, bisect it, and anything else that we might do.
And if you have not seen the video for the song that is playing right here, find it on YouTube. It is well worth the watch.
Yeah, I don't even know exactly what you look for here. I don't know if, Steve, put a few seconds up and we have to keep talking because I always worry about using YouTube videos and having our show get taken down. But yeah, it's Edwin Starr. Man, he has more than just this. He's got a song called Funky Music, Show Enough, Turn Me On. But anyway, that's not what this show's about. So we're going to talk about, this is Star Trek Weekly, so of course we're going to talk about Episode 8. But I thought and it's sort of an interesting spot to start is the fact that from Star Trek Weekly, Anthony Rapp made some huge news over this past week, actually the day after our last show. And it was a story that he had told before that about, you know, and most people have heard an incident that happened when he was a younger man with Kevin Spacey. And he told people before. And sometimes in an interview, they would not say who it was. They would redact the name. But it had apparently been out there before. And he just told it again. And I think good for him that he felt like this is a good opportunity for me to remind people, hey, this guy who, me personally, I have always thought is a great actor. I don't know anything about his private life. I just know his work. And, you know, I've always enjoyed his work. But you hear stuff like this, and it's terrible. And then it starts a little snowball rolling. And from all intents and purposes, there'll be no final season of House of Cards. Because, not just because of what Anthony Rapp said. So, I don't know. I hear this, and I didn't really know anything about Anthony Rapp before this. Because, except I knew he was in Rent, which is a show I personally don't enjoy. But I just felt like, I know this guy. I feel so bad that something like this happened. But I felt good that he felt like this is a good time to tell this story. When you heard this, Frank, what did you think?
I mean, I feel like it's a story that, yeah, I could see him telling it before. And given the way that the industry kind of handled those stories before everything kind of got the attention with the Weinstein story.
Yeah.
You could see why things were kind of redacted. But now with everything kind of being open and more doors being opened and kind of shining light on some of the way that people have kind of operated, have kind of squashed those stories from getting out, you can tell the story again now and it's going to be heard and acted upon much more strongly than ever before.
Yeah, and I think he realized that and he figured that that was the time to do it. And so, I don't know, I mean, good for him. Not good for him that it happened, but good for him that he was able to bring this to people's attention and look, something's happening as a result. And so, I don't know, I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, I hear Anthony Rapp's name in the news now, I'm like, oh my God, it's Lieutenant Stamets, who we affectionately call Lieutenant Guy from Rent.
Yes.
Which, by the way, somebody in the comments last week said we should really stop calling him that. And his name is Lieutenant Paul Stamets. that was Mark Zutkoff. And he also pointed out that it's Ash Tyler, not Nash Tyler. And I apologize for that, but look, I'm just such a huge Don Johnson fan. I always have Nash Bridges on the brain. There's, you know, but duly noted, look, there's a lot of mistakes. Anyway, so we'll move on and talk about the episode. But I don't know. It was just, I felt like it would be weird if we didn't address it. You know, if like one of the main stars of Star Trek makes headlines. So before we dive into the episode, there is a theory that was presented to me after last week's episode.
Ooh,
by
intriguing.
A friend of mine. His name is Mark. His last name is Hunt. So I always put a long space between those names. And he pointed out that this theory says that Admiral Cornwall is the same character known as Leith Leth, L-E-T-H-E, from the original series episode Dagger of the Mind. That character was a former inmate working as a therapist at a Federation penal colony. They never specify what happened to her. And since on Monday, my friend Mark said that, I've read another article that says that. And I don't know that that's what I feel like is happening after tonight's episode, but I love stuff like this. I love people speculating like, hey, that might be who this is. It's not impossible. Your thoughts? It's obviously not something we thought about in watching the last two episodes, but had you heard that before I just said it?
Or? No, not until you mentioned that.
This is news to you.
But it would not surprise me to see the show doing that because they certainly have touchstones from various different shows kind of incorporated into this. And to do something, if you're already using Sarek, why not have somebody else that's kind of like a little tangential character?
I think that could be really interesting to sort of get some background on a character that obviously most people don't really think about. I mean, pretty far.
And it's definitely like looking back into the old series, finding these things that have been kind of teased but never fully explained or explored, and seeing how you can use it now for your purposes to kind of flesh out that full backstory.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Let us know in the chat whether you're watching live or if you're watching the archive after the fact. Do you agree with that theory? And if so, what, or if not, just tell us what you've seen that tells you either yes or no that that's possibly happening. And I felt a little stronger about it before tonight's episode. I don't think she's dead, by the way. But anyway, we'll get into that storyline. As my terrible Latin at the top of the show said, si vi pacem, parabellum, if you want peace, prepare for war. And that's a very fitting title. It made me look it up, but I still did. And as we sort of, as the episode unfolds, especially the very end, apparently that's the only way to get peace is through war. That's a very like 1984, and by that I mean the novel, not the year. It's a very 1984 sort of like war is peace. You know, it's like, how are you going to bring about peace? Well, through war. So there's a lot of different ways that we see that in the course of the episode. Just sort of as an overall, what did you think of the episode, Frank?
I mean, it's always interesting to watch this in terms of the serialized nature. Which is, other than like maybe like Deep Space Nine, Voyager to a little bit, and you know, some stuff with Enterprise, but like this kind of really from the outset kind of pursued in a serialized fashion right from the start. But within this, I felt this episode was one that also felt like the most closest to the Star Trek episodes, especially like Next Generation, where you've got, you know, an A, B, and I mean, sometimes a C plot kind of running through it. And that felt very similar to like just like a one-off episode that you'd get.
Yeah, if not for the way it ended, I didn't actually see that there was going to be something like that. I just felt like we were going to, you know, all right, Saru's going to have to just sort of deal with his actions in the future. But no, it just sort of runs right into the next episode, the big fall finale. This episode really starts, it hits the ground running, or I guess it hits space running, because, you know, Discovery's rescuing the USS Gagarin, named for Yuri Gagarin, the first man in space. I was just like, wait, what is that? Anyways, yeah. So, like, I do a lot of research in the hour after I watch the show before I come here, and it's called Google. But anyway, so they're there to basically help out this ship. They are not successful, but there's some interesting conversation about the Klingon birds of prey, the Klingon birds of prey with the cloaking devices, which they still call invisibility screens, which is cute.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it's like, oh yeah, this is before that word had been kind of coined.
Yeah, but the realization that they can't fire while they're cloaked, which is very helpful because then it's like, just be ready, and you know, only Discovery with the spore drive would be able to get out of that situation, though, because not only did the Gagarin get destroyed, they were in a pretty rough shape. What do you think, Frank, this notion, of course, that they have the Klingon bird of prey have the cloaking device, and just the idea that they always got it from the Romulans, and now it's shared and all the Klingons have it. Do you feel like that tracks with the canon, or do you not even try to make it all match up anymore with this show?
I feel like it's weird. I feel like this show wants to make it as match up as much as it possibly can, and then hopefully the audience will forgive those moments when it doesn't quite exactly line up. And I certainly we've talked about this before too, but you know, just like the issue of where you can't. The biggest issue is like, hey, it's set back in the past, and you look so much more futuristic than anything that was at the time. So you have to forgive that And so I feel like if you're forgiving that, there might be some things that you just wouldn't.
Yeah. Change. And also, you know, the idea that they're trying to find an organic way to be able to sort of do like a sonar and predict the cloaked ships and like, okay, well, we know they don't have that in the future. So yeah. It's that same problem we run into every week. And some people don't like that we harp on it, but it takes me out of the episode a little bit, you know,
it does.
Because I'm like, well, that's not going to work, you know, or at least like, let's find out how it doesn't work. Speaking of the main thing that we think about week after week, let's talk a little bit about the Spore Drive, which really seems to be taking a lot out of Lieutenant Stamets, a.k.a. Lieutenant Guy from Rent. And, you know, he's very disoriented at one point, and he calls Tilly Captain. And there are a couple different theories out there that even before this episode that I saw. One posits the theory that... is he seeing the mirror universe? Is he seeing a future? Or is he just disoriented in this instance? What do you think of those three options?
The more I'm thinking not necessarily becoming unstuck in time because he's not really going anywhere, but in the sense that he is not as tied directly to the current timeline that he's in, that he can have moments where he is seeing the future, perhaps the past, a lot of different things. He's becoming more cosmically aware.
Yeah, in a very different sci-fi universe. On Quantum Leap, they explain that time is in no way linear, and you can just kind of jumble it up and it touches each other at different points.
Yeah.
So they take the string, and it's all right there. So I think that could be very. He could have seen a future where Tilly's a captain, which is, I feel like that's what it is, because there was the little seed two episodes ago. I want to be a captain. So I feel pretty confident that he has seen that and she is a captain.
I feel like that's too on the nose to not have that be the case. To have that say to the only other character that's mentioned, like, I want to be a captain.
Yeah, and people love the mirror universe, and I'm you know, certainly a fan of it. I think it's been used very well in different series. But in the chat comments last week, Martianize, sorry if I said your name wrong, was wondering if the scars on Lorca's back look similar to the Mirror Universe's Agonizers. So people are always looking for ways to tie this show to the Mirror Universe. And I don't know, I personally haven't seen anything yet. I don't know. I feel like Lorca's scars are just scars that maybe one day we'll get a story about, but
I feel like that's the thing in a show like this, where it is, there are a lot of concepts that are very beloved by the fans.
Yeah,
that you start telling new stories in this universe, people are going to be looking for everything as a possible point leading to something, and sometimes you're trying too hard.
Yeah, and by the way, if we do get a mirror episode, a mirror universe episode of this show, I'll be very excited to see what they do with it. But yeah, I don't feel like we're actually there at this point, but let us know in the chat. Renji90998 says he agrees with Frank that this felt the most Star Trek, this episode. I think in a lot of ways it really did. Stress-Free K says, with each successive episode, the agnostics keep saying this feels like the most Star Trek. What might that mean? Well, I think that the earliest episodes of Star Trek Discovery, I thought, were very good. They're very interesting, engaging. I was motivated to see more, but they didn't feel so much like Star Trek, especially the disparity between the first two episodes and then the subsequent episodes. I think that they felt actually more like J.J. Abrams movies, the first couple. And I think we're getting a little bit more in depth. They're able to slow it down just a little bit. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I think more just in the way that it's kind of plotted out and paced, where you get to have, as I mentioned, the A, B, and sometimes C storyline, where some of the previous episodes this season, they may have been in separate locations, but they all kind of fed into the same story. This one, you have kind of separate plots that kind of just run parallel to each other. Maybe might touch, maybe might not. And in this one, I mean, right at the very end, since it's serialized, we kind of see how things kind of come to an head and kind of propel us to next week. But large part for the main episode, it was just like kind of three stories kind of running separately from each other.
Yeah, and I felt like this episode showcased how, you know, the show's mostly about Burnham, but in all honesty, she wasn't the main driving force between this episode.
Which I like.
This episode. Yeah, which I think is great. She's still there. She's still playing a very important part. But, you know, I thought that Lieutenant Saru and Ash Tyler both had some good moments down on the planet. So I thought, I don't know, it feels the most Star Trek because it's paced sort of in the right way. And it deals with these big concepts like war, What is it good for? No, but you know, basically the if you want peace, prepare for war. So
yeah, and for me, I guess what I'm saying, the most Star Trek, I feel like just the way that it's plotted out, not in terms of like the themes and the way that it's executed, but just more of just like I'm watching the way Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, I'd say, to the extent where they could have multiple storylines kind of running throughout the same episode. I feel like it seems Star Trek in its execution of a story.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. Especially the sort of, you know, Next Generation onward stories had a lot of, you know, traditional BC stories going on, more so than even the original series. So we get some good background on Saru, by the way, when they get down to the planet. He actually has a mild sense of humor when he said, "We particularly enjoy being discussed in the third person while present." I actually laughed at that. But the idea that they can run 80 kilometers per hour while being pursued, which of course is foreshadowing for something that happens. But I just love the idea. It's like, oh yeah, because we're always scared, we can go really fast. And I thought that sort of the way that he interacts with, I don't know what to call it other than the blue mist. I know it was the essence of the planet Pavo, which at first I thought they were saying Pavel, like Chekhov, so I was excited. But again, that's just grasp it. This is exactly what you're talking about. I want it to mean something that it doesn't. And, you know, he really wanted that. And I think he found the peace that he'd never had, which it seems like he wasn't scared for those few hours. You know,
it was interesting that because he's talked about his race before, but I feel like this is the first time in an episode where they really got into what it means to be an episode that is built to be, or what it is to be a race that's built to be prey. What that does to a species, where you're constantly seeing fear, where you're constantly feeling fear every moment of your life, because you never know what could possibly be a source of an attack.
No, exactly.
And that's got to be horribly just relentless. That feeling has got to be relentless on somebody.
Yeah, I feel like Saru and his entire race of people, I think that's definitely ripe for sort of a novel to explore, because you're not going to really get to truly explore that, you know, in a TV show, apart from the amount of time they devoted this episode. You know, you're going to get to kind of touch on it, but there's so much else going on. But you feel like, you know, in a novel, you spend 100 pages kind of dealing with that sort of thing. And I don't know, personally, I'm just interested. It's such a fascinating concept and, you know, one that we haven't seen before.
Well, I mean, when he just drops the fact, like, they can sense a predator within 10 miles.
Yeah.
To just even understand better now through the episode, like, that's like so such an early detection system that for that span of time, you are just, you're constantly seeing fear. Like, I mean, that you're being so alerted so early that you're just living in this constant state of fear. It's just got to be soul crushing at some points.
So we also, you know, even while they're down on the planet Pavo, we get a little bit more of the relationship between Lieutenant Tyler and Burnham. Not only is there a kiss, very exciting, but he talks a little bit about his plans for when the war's over. And Burnham just very bluntly points out something that I hadn't thought about. You know, when the war's over, I'm going back to jail. You know, it's like, you know, I get to do this because Lorca wants me to do this. Nobody else wants me to do this. At some point, I got to go back. I have a life sentence. So what did you think about that? I mean, is that something you'd thought about? Is that Burnham, obviously there's no future for her in Starfleet, but she's also not actually free.
True. Like, that is a thought, like, oh, yeah, the war does end at some point, because we know it doesn't exist once we get into the original series.
Yeah.
So, there is going to come an ending. And what does that mean for her? Certainly the way you can do, I mean, you could really go to the downbeat ending where she could still be the hero of the day, and then she still has to go back in and serve her life sentence, or she does something so extraordinary and changes everything that they give her like time served, and then she's off to just to kind of do that thing. So
yeah, what I feel most likely, the huge heroic gesture you're referencing, but she dies during it. So, you know, because she would be going back to prison, and so she's probably like, hey, this is a better way to go, I feel like.
And be honest, I think I would probably prefer that, because I think that ties up a lot of stuff in terms of the larger continuity and her character and why she's never name-checked anywhere else before.
Like, not even a passing mention from Spock that he has this, like, half-sister, half-adopted sister. I mean, a woman who is at least on good enough terms with both of Spock's parents that they went to basically her graduation day. Yeah.
And I know that's the difficulty of injecting a character into a bunch of stories that have already been laid down since the 60s.
It's funny because that's the sort of thing you do run into with novels and comic books. You know, you'll get this like, oh, this is a really cool character, but you'll never see them on the screen in any way. So, yeah, they're sort of going back and doing that.
But for that relationship moment, do you worry more for Burnham or Ash? Because I feel like when you have the character that says, like, you know, I'm just going to set up, you know, I'm going to go back to this great lake house that I got and go out fishing, that pretty much says, like, this guy's not going to be living very much longer.
No, yeah, I think that, you know, it's one of those... I saw a trailer for the movie about the horse soldiers. You know, Chris Hemsworth's in it. I forget what the actual title of the movie is. It's like 12 soldiers. But it's like the story of the horse soldiers. And everyone says in the beginning, don't worry, I'll be right back. And it's like, oh, you know, I'll talk to you when I get back. And you're just like, okay, so everybody says they're going to be back. And it just reminds you of, okay, so yeah. So he's going to get to go, you know, out to Lake Shasta and just relax. And yeah, I don't think that's ever going to happen. You know?
No. I mean, certainly more predictions, but I feel like I don't see Ash, as much as I'm enjoying his character, I don't see him making it out of the season.
Yeah, I think that, especially as the head of security, you're kind of the first line of defense, you know? I mean, it's, you know, look what happened to the original head of security on Star Trek Next Generation.
Yeah,
you know?
That's true.
And then they replaced her with a Klingon, which is probably a better choice.
Well, and I feel like we get the seeds of that because we do hear him talk with Saru about his feelings about the Klingons.
Yeah.
And how he does want to make them hurt for what they did to him.
Right.
And I feel like that could certainly be a blind spot for him and what could lead him to potentially not making it.
Yeah, because if Klingons end up somehow on the Discovery, he's not going to think rationally. He's just going to want to inflict pain. And I feel pretty confident that we will probably see some Klingons on the Discovery, maybe even next week. I don't know. I feel like it's about to happen. Let's see. So we kind of go through this whole thing with Saru, and you know the way that his storyline ties up, you kind of feel for the guy because yeah, he definitely got sucked in by it, and I think that it makes sense that he would, and you know he feels so badly for how he acted towards his crewmates. But at the same time, I don't even know that he was happy. He was just not terrified, you know? So the idea that he was working so hard to preserve that, and, you know, to some degree, I guess he was assimilated by the blue mist, the planet Pavo. But I think that, I don't know, it was just, I just felt bad for him, you know, especially at the end when he's just kind of laying there in sick bay and doesn't want to look at Burnham, you know.
Because certainly for the majority of the episode, you go in thinking like, all right, this, the mist, the entity on Pavo has done something to him and kind of altered him in some way. And I mean, I guess at the end you find out that they did, but what they did is they just took away his ability to feel fear for that time. And it gave him a complete sense of peace, which for a creature that's bred to be prey and to not, find, for the first time in your life, experience a life to enjoy without fear, I could understand how they could just completely alter you. Like, my gosh, I don't. But then also, then you become so terrified to lose that. So in a way, you're feeling another type of fear because you're now afraid to lose this incredible gift that you've been given.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. Sort of back to our earlier point, Stress-Free K in the chat says, Ash is more damaged than Michael. Michael bounces back. And yeah, you feel like, you know, Burnham's obviously been through quite a bit, but it's probably the overwhelming sense of logic that she has in her that she's able to kind of, all right, I'm going to move past this. But also, I mean, he was tortured by Klingons. So,
yes.
I mean, it's a much different state of affairs. So it's hard to compare, but I think they're both broken in very different ways, which, you know, hopefully they get at least a blip of happiness, but somehow I feel like we're not going to get to see that much of that. Let's go over to one of those B or C storylines, which is the Klingon ship, where we have Admiral Cornwall is there, and I had to look up the name of the Lady Klingon because I always call her the Lady Klingon, Laurel. And she's there and says, you know, like, obviously I hear from my spies that you have a prisoner and, you know, I'm an expert interrogator, so let me talk to her. And I don't know, when she's talking to Admiral Cornwall, I'm just like, all right, so she's like gaming her this whole time. Like she doesn't want to defect. And then as the episode goes along, I'm like, well, maybe she does. And I don't know, I guess that's just good storytelling, that it just seemed transparent at the moment when it started. But then I'm like, oh, no, maybe this is what she really wanted. But then they get caught and she has to rough her up. What did you think as that storyline played out?
I don't think that she wants to defect, but I think she wants it for Cole, the clan that's been stranded. And they're kind of basically plotting their own kind of return. I figure that she's working with him, wants Discovery so that she can use it with him to come back and attack.
Figure out, because it's definitely gotten out that the Discovery has some kind of weapon, some kind of drug. It's not even a weapon, just some kind of way to travel. I mean, Mudd knew about it.
Yeah.
Harry Mudd, not Harvey Mudd. Not to make that mistake again.
Yeah, so I feel like it's not wanting to defect Starfleet or the Federation. It is just get me on Discovery so I can use it for my own purposes to take advantage of the Klingon Empire.
Yeah, so what she's being duplicitous about isn't the, sort of the objective of the Klingon Emperor, for lack of a better term there. She's just trying to continue figuring out how to, which is the other love story that's played out this season, is the fascinating Klingon love story. But Admiral Cornwell definitely gets roughed up and electrocuted and a few things during the course of that. And I think that Laurel's able to at least pass off the idea that she might be dead. But
I feel like the headbutt stunned her enough that I feel like that electrocution against into that, I think that was more for show than it actually had a significant bodily effect on the Admiral.
Yeah, and I mean, as we see, that apparently Laurel wasn't fooling anyone. They just kind of wanted to see how far she was willing to go. And I don't know. I mean, it's interesting that we continue to get the storyline from the Klingons that was set up. It's kind of the one carryover from the first couple episodes. I don't love the way that it goes, though, and it is still distracting. There's just something about the way that they look, the way that they sound. It does still sound like they're struggling with all of the Klingon. I liked when Laurel was speaking English or whatever it is that we hear, whatever the universal translator is able to turn that into. And I think that when the Klingons speak English, it's a lot easier to navigate those scenes. Not just because I'm lazy and I don't want to read. They actually use a great font on this show that I've, it's a large print. And probably because a lot of people are watching the show on, their phone or their tablet. So when you have the little closed captioning that we usually get in movies, it's a lot harder to read. It's a minor point, but I did notice it. In the pilot, you're like, that is some close captioning. Yeah. That's some subtitles. I don't know. What did you think about the whole sort of arc, the Klingon arc in this episode?
It is interesting that they let Laurel go through if he's onto her. They let her go through the faux interrogation, the faux fight, then bring her back and have her, she offers to interrogate other prisoners that they get. She's got to swear loyalty. He paints her, kind of branding her to the house, and then calls her out. It's like,
why'd you go that far?
Yeah, you could have just stopped before you actually said, all right, this paint now makes you a member of the house.
And we saw what he did to all of the other leaders of all the other houses.
Yes.
So why in the world is she still alive? I know they get distracted at the end, but I mean, why isn't she, that moment when she tries to walk away, why isn't she killed then?
Yes.
I guess, to continue the story.
Because I feel like it's going to... What I do like at least about the Klingon thing, that it is not simply just the Federation versus the Klingon, that there is some intrigue within the Klingon Empire where there are at least a smaller faction looking to... I feel like they both want to dominate the Federation, but at least, they have different ways of wanting to go about it.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of unifying all the houses... I mean, that's kind of the common thing. It's just, he's like, I want to unify all the houses by, ruling all the houses. And the other ones just want everybody to work together, teamwork, which doesn't seem entirely Klingon to me. But I don't know. I mean, it's interesting because obviously what we find out is that the planet Pavo makes the decision of... Well, we really want these two factions to just work it out. So we're going to go ahead and bring the Klingons here. Discovery's already here. And Lorca's so pissed at Burnham. And she's like, I didn't do this.
Yeah.
This is a stupid planet. I mean, honestly, if you're going to blame anybody, you got to blame Saru for, basically interfacing with it. She's just, she and, Tyler tries to stand up for you know, his girlfriend, whatever. But it's just like, hey, she was doing what we went there to do. And he doesn't actually say, but like, this is kind of Saru's fault that they know so implicitly what we want and what we're going to do. And I don't know. It's an interesting idea. It's a great setup for a... It's so funny that we live in an age of a thing called a fall finale.
Yes.
You know, especially when they're often in the winter. But anyway, the fall finale, and it's just like, okay, so like how a show always used to go away at the holidays and then come back in the new year. But they are building to what looks like a pretty epic encounter. What did you think about sort of that turn at the very end of the episode, that the planet is like, we're just bring the Klingons here and let them work it out?
Yeah, it's like, it's like, hey, I've got an easy idea. Why don't I just be the middle? I'll be the person that brings this whole thing to a head. Interesting to see that. I was curious about the way that Ash kind of supports Burnham in that moment and almost like kind of cuts her off as she's in mid-sentence to kind of vouch for her. And yeah. They do show Burnham's face for a moment. I couldn't quite tell if it was an irritation or it was just like, well, he's, you know, this is just a tense moment.
Right. But it's also, as we always have to remind ourselves, 10 years before the original series. So it's probably a very chauvinistic time where it's like, quiet men are talking. You know? There's some level of that that we still get for as open-minded as everyone is. So I don't know. I don't know. Very excited for next week. It's funny, we caught up and we're going to be doing, you know,
just in time for the fall finale.
But, you know, I think that it's good that we'll be caught up for next Sunday's episode because I think people are going to really want to talk about it. And if we were like, yeah, we'll talk about it next week.
I imagine that, of course, if you're a fall finale, it's best designed to end in some sort of cliffhanger, at least in part. But do you feel like this, the entire rest of the season, will be dedicated to the Klingon War and it'll end at the end of the first season? Or do you think it'll go past?
I think that the Klingon War will go past the first season, but in a way that you feel like it's winding down. And then just there's, you know, some incident, probably, you know, some renegade Klingon makes it look like the Federation did something that continues the tensions going forward. But it's, you know what, most likely Burnham just starts another war because that's what she does. She starts wars with the Klingons. I think that we'll get the indication that it's winding. I also don't think that the second half of the season is going to just explicitly deal with the Klingon War. I think that we'll get some other stories sprinkled throughout as we have during the first half. I also don't know how many that is. Are we getting 9 more? I don't even know how many what the total is. Is the total 18? So that's something we'll try and find out for next week. I just thought of it now while we're talking and did not think to Google it before the show.
Because I don't know. I mean, I guess I could see this going the rest of the season. I don't know if I'd want to see a second full season about that.
Yeah.
But I think then you'd have to see a lot of story gymnastics to explain how they could end the war and still keep Burnham on the Discovery, whoever remains intact on the Discovery.
Yeah.
And what is some other threatening menace that has kind of bubbled up?
And how do we keep Lorca in the captain's chair, you know, because the Admiral was planning on recommending this. And, well, we'll see if she makes it back. We'll see what happens to her.
I got a feel it's going to be one of the things where Lorca is going to be instrumental in getting her back, so much so that she's like, all right, I'm going to forgive what I saw before. I'll keep quiet because you're the hero.
Stress-free K, very active in the chat. Thank you. Points out that Paavo, the planet, doesn't know any better. Plus, it's very lonely. So it's like bringing more friends. It's like, I have my friends on the Discovery. Let's have my friends, the Klingons, be here. Now I'm not lonely anymore. That's an interesting theory. I think it just does not understand the concept of war. It understands like disharmony and balance, but actual like war is just a foreign concept.
Yeah.
So, because you wouldn't bring that to your back door, would you?
But, no, yeah. not knowingly.
Yeah.
That seems like a headache.
Also, Stressful K points out that, just sort of a prediction, that I think the Klingons will use the Admiral as a bargaining chip, which will surprise Lorca and cause him to have to make a decision. Does he save his friend and form a lover? Or does he keep his job in the captain's chair and get the Admiral back? I feel like if that were to come to pass, he would, of course, make some kind of deal. Actually, probably try and do both, you know?
As best he could. But again, this is a Lorca that, at least in my feeling, he definitely set up Admiral Cornwall to be put in a situation where she was either going to die or at least be taken hostage.
Yeah, no, exactly. Anyway, so those are our overall thoughts on this episode. I won't really go too deep into what we saw from the preview for next week, but we see some very interesting things. We see that there's going to be some continued strain on Lieutenant Stamets with the spore drive, and also burn him on the Klingon ship. So that's why you put stuff like that in the trailer, because you're like, well, how does that happen? You know, so I'm very excited for those.
I will say it was nice to see this episode because we've seen the ports,
yeah,
on Stamets' arm, but yeah, they actually kind of see the whole process work.
It's a great point. We actually saw it happening because yeah, we saw the ports which he revealed to Mudd, but we actually didn't see it working, and then we see sort of, I don't even know what that reaction was. He was very disoriented though, you know, when he got out of it.
Yeah, because I mean, it seemed like at least from last episode, he was very much like the lovey-dovey, I'm seeing all these possibilities in the universe, all yeah, these different timelines, and you know, let's just embrace love. And then I feel like it's kind of interesting this, what this is whole doing to him. He's kind of very much going up and down, kind of yeah, riding a tidal wave of feelings and emotions going through this whole process. Because this one, he definitely, as Tilly said, kind of reverted back to how he used to be.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, yeah. And it was a lot of like, dismissed, cadet. You know, yeah, he was definitely back to kind of being a jerk. I wanted to catch up on some comments that were left behind.
Comments.
Christian Dash, love the name. Love this panel. Way more open to new things than the Collider panel. Well, there you go. Tell your friends how much you love this panel. And it's interesting that Christian feels like we're open to things, because sometimes I feel like you and I are definitely dragging our feet, because it's like, oh, I guess if they have to tell this story before the original series, it's fine, but I really wish they weren't. We say that most episodes.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because Carrie's so much more positive than we are. You know?
No, and I was just thinking about that, too. It's like, you know, I mean, I can sit there and constantly harp about it every single week about that. But, I mean, it's my voice is not going to change. Les Moonves and CBS All Access and their yeah, programming, they're going to continue the story, tell the story that they want to tell. So I can just sit there and complain the whole time, or at least try to appreciate the story that they're trying to tell.
Right, and I'm definitely enjoying the story they're trying to tell. Like, the little things that we point out, we mostly point it out because it's a show about Star Trek and people kind of expect to point that out.
That's true.
You expect to notice it, and you're almost proud when you notice something. You're like, actually, you know, just a question. Yeah, you know, just some of that. It's almost like Columbo. Yeah. One more thing. And yeah, but I don't know. I mean, I don't know a new show that I've watched that I'm enjoying more than this right now. I mean, anything that's certainly not anything new this fall, but I'm trying to think of the last time that I found a new show that I thought was as engaging as this. And yeah, look, because it's branded Star Trek and it's in that universe, I'm predisposed to like it. But I'm really enjoying the show. And a lot of people ask me, is it worth paying for? And I'm like, it's really hard for me to say, because we don't have to pay for it, because yeah, they pay for it at AfterBuzz. But if, just hypothetically, if all of a sudden, you know, I wasn't here anymore, I feel like I'd pay for it in the new season now, you know, when the second half of the season comes in January. I will know that there's new episodes. I'll feel like I'm missing out, and I'll be worried that it'll be spoiled for me. You yeah, know? I feel like CBS All Access might be winning me over, and I don't want that, but I don't know. Just hypothetically, do you feel like if you had to pay for the second half of the season, would you?
I think it'd be tough to, because I know we kind of talked about like when we saw the first episode and it was free,
yeah,
how we kind of approach the rest of the season. It's like, hey, if you can get that free week, wait till the tail end.
Yeah.
That way you can just binge watch everything. Because if you wanted to watch it like right now and be up to date, you're gonna, over the course of the whole season, you're paying like $108.
Yeah,
but if
no,
it was,
that's a good point.
Say it was 18 episodes, so yeah, it's $108. Is this season of Star Trek worth $108? That's tough for me to say. I don't think I could spend that money for
right,
it.
These episodes, you probably, the way that the weeks fell, you probably would have spent $18. Or, you know, it depends, I guess, if you have the $10 version, then you'd spend $30.
Yeah.
And $18 sounds all right, but when you put it that way, yeah, it's like $108 for any show. And literally, I get nothing else out of it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to watch episodes of Elementary or Sherlock. No, it's Elementary is the one on CBS. You know, I'm not gonna use it for anything else. I'm only getting it for Star Trek. And
yeah, if I had friends and they were interested, I honestly would do it like you were saying. I would wait till everything's there and then go buy it.
I have a friend who was about to crack. He was about to do it, and I'm like, it's almost done. Get the free week, and I know he's going to be going to his parents in Florida for a whole week for Thanksgiving. I'm like, you're going to need to have the distraction of 9 episodes of Star Trek to binge. Save it for that. And he's like, you know what? That's a good idea. So, yeah, I don't know. But let us know what you think. Do you feel like it's worth paying for? Assuming that people that are watching the show are paying for it. But I know we do have some international viewers who are getting it, you know, for free, using air quotes, on Netflix. You know,
which, if you have that option,
yeah,
you get
which would be
more.
Great. If I had an Australian login for Netflix, hint, hint. No, I'm just kidding. It doesn't work that way. But I would be very happy that I was getting it included in something I was already paying for.
But to go to your earlier point about, like, just in terms of being more excited about this, I feel like even during, like, the last series, like Star Trek Enterprise, I was not as excited to watch. I mean, I enjoyed the series, you know, for what it was.
Yeah.
But in terms of just, like, looking forward to watching it every single week, I would say this has probably been one since Deep Space Nine that I've been jazzed about wanting to watch every single
week. Yeah, no, Enterprise felt somewhat like a chore. And just for me personally, Voyager always felt like a chore. It was just I disliked so many members of the crew. I pretty much only liked Captain Janeway, you know, and then and just everybody else just got on my nerves. But anyway, some more comments. An interesting one from J-Boy, still trying to figure out a mission for the Discovery. Each series always has a mission. What's Discovery's? And to me, their mission isn't a 5-year mission to explore and all that. It's to win a war. And that's just what it feels like to me. So it's very different than the other shows. You know, Voyager has a very specific mission. We're so far away. Let's see if we can even possibly get home. I think that that's a very unique mission. This one is, you know, something we haven't seen before. It's like, we're gonna try and win a war. What do you think the Discovery's mission is now as we're watching it, not when they originally designed the vessel? And you know.
Right now, I mean, the mission is to beat the Klingons through any means necessary. So I think it's almost like a dual purpose. One, to beat the Klingons. Two, to also make sure that you can replicate the spore drive to use it on multiple ships throughout the fleet. How can we best use this?
Right, exactly. And, you know, it's not just the Discovery's mission. It's the Federation's mission is to really, you know, it's the admiral that we saw again via hologram is just like, yeah, you got to figure it out. This is your job. You know, you're at the front lines. You're going to help us win this war. Yeah, let's see.
Because I always thought, like, that was interesting when I was always watching, like, the original series or Next Generation, is I feel like almost every other alien race they came in contact with had a leg up in terms of, like, hey, we've got cloaking devices, something like that. It's like, oh, that falls back into, like, harping about when the show is set.
Yeah.
Or it's like, well, we know this doesn't exist in continuing on in the other series. It would have been nice to have this in the future to see, like, oh, the Federation also has some sort of advantage.
Yeah. No, no. I think that would actually be very interesting. One more comment. LACPAK, Lack Pack, I guess. Very simple comment, which I agree with 100%. Boom, you all rock. Yes, we do. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
Anyway, that's it for this week. Next week, be sure to tune in at 10 Pacific for our wall-to-wall coverage of the fall finale, which I hope isn't in Latin. And then, to let you know, we are going to continue doing the show. This is Star Trek Weekly. This is not the Star Trek Discovery After Show. So, in 2 weeks, we're going to start doing a series of topics, and I wanted to give everybody a heads-up, time to prepare, if you want to rewatch these movies. In 2 weeks, the topic is going to be, are the J.J. Abrams movies garbage? I personally don't feel like it, but it's out there. People have asked that, and so I feel like you need to ask it in that way. So, if you want to rewatch any of those, or maybe hate-watch them, whatever you want to do, go ahead and do it. And so we'll start doing things like that, you know, revisit some of the old series, some of the old movies, and you know, novels, comics, who knows, we'll figure it out. Let us know what you want to see. But that's all after next week, when we will do episode 8, 9. What is that? 9. Episode 9 of Star Trek Discovery. This was 8. But for Frank Maron at Happy Go Jackie, I'm Christian Blatt at Christian DMZ, and the invisible Carrie D. Lane at Carrie D. Lane. And we will all, at least theoretically, all be back next Sunday. Thanks so much, everybody. And, of course, live long and prosper.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only. Do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.